On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Ted Cruz wrapping the bacon around the semi-automatic weapon to cook it.
I understand that trade is not a sexy issue.
Nobody knows where the Republican Party is going to land. I mean, it's kind of like a country road. No one knows where it will end.
In many ways, Marco Rubio is the Michael Jordan of American politics.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
We knew that we hadn't written a normal television show. We shut down the freeway, and we recreate the freeway chase. That's not what you do on a normal television show.
The Big Bang Theory does not get to shut down freeways.
Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, creators of the new FX series The People vs. O.J. Simpson, are veteran screenwriters known for their movies about real people, including Ed Wood and Larry Flint. The two weren't looking to write for television until they got the chance to take on the so-called trial of the century. But first on the News Banter, Sumner Redstone goes into the sunset. What's next for CBS and Viacom? Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Matt, the talk of the town right now continues to be, I feel like we've had so many iterations of this story. People are calling it Game of Thrones when I talk to them in the industry. And that is this fight over the fate of Sumner Redstone's media empire. Now, as we've discussed, Sumner Redstone is 92 years old, very frail from all accounts, may or may not be able to speak. His former companion, Manuela Hertzer, is in court challenging his competence, saying that when she was booted as his healthcare proxy, he was not competent to sign that order, and she was replaced with Philippe Domon, the CEO of Viacom. Now comes the true corporate battle, and the adversaries in this seem to be Shari Redstone, Sumner's daughter, who is a 61-year-old lawyer by training, versus the same Philippe Domon.
Right. And we saw two things happen in the past week. One, a very smooth transition at CBS Corp. Leslie Moonves, very competent, very in charge executive, made chairman of CBS Corp, replacing Sumner Redstone. Boom, done. Everyone accepted it, moved on. Then the next day, we saw the same thing happen at Viacom, where Philippe Domon was made chairman of that company, despite the objection of Shari Redstone, who put out a very clear statement saying that she did not want a person who fits the characteristics that Philippe Domon fits on the trust, involved in his personal affairs, to be the leader of that company. The board went ahead with it anyways, and now Philippe Domon is going to be the replacement for Sumner Redstone. And the implications for that touch all aspects of Hollywood, from Paramount Pictures to MTV, Comedy Central, all of these companies which are dependent on the leadership of the very top and have been competently served by Sumner Redstone for many years until his health began to decline.
Yeah, when you say the trust, now, of course, there is a trust that will take over. I'm not clear at this moment of the criteria of whether Sumner Redstone actually must breathe his last for this trust to take over this media empire, or whether if Sumner Redstone ultimately is declared to be not competent, which could happen with this court case that's pending, brought, as I said, by his former companion, Manuela Hertzer, if he is declared incompetent, does the trust take over? But at that point, the trust will control these two companies. And the question is, there are seven people on the trust. One of them is Shari Redstone. One of them is Philippe Domon. And there's a bunch of other lawyers and Shari Redstone's son. This group of seven will decide what happens with these companies, ultimately, especially Viacom, since CBS seems to be settled. And Shari Redstone said that, you know, someone in Philippe Domon's position as a member of that trust, as she is, should not be in the chairman's role. And the board at Viacom seems to have not even really taken 10 minutes to consider her objections.
Well, this is the same board that gave Philippe Domon a $54 million pay package this year when the stock of Viacom dropped 40%. So that's a separate issue. But in the meantime, until this trust kicks in, you have this court battle going on. And Shari Redstone gave a very interesting declaration this past week in that case, basically saying, first of all, she said that her father, Sumner, has given $70 million to Manuela Hertzer over the years, his former companion.
Yeah. That's a lot. And that's just in the last few years. So who knows, before that, she's been around for a long time.
Right. And since Manuela was removed in October as his caretaker, Sherry has really stepped up her efforts to take control of the family. And this declaration laid it all out. She believes her father is in a much better place with the family involved. They have access to him and they visit him. Her son is in Los Angeles and can go visit him whenever he wants. They think that this is the best for Sumner at the time. And Manuela is fighting and fighting and fighting. She wants back in and she wants to be that caretaker. She says because she cares about him. Others believe it's because she believes there's more money at stake for her.
Yeah, she certainly has been insistent that she has Sumner Redstone's interests at heart. There are a lot of skeptics about that and what her real agenda is. But the judge in the case, you know, I feel like having read some of these court papers, the judge is practically begging to leave a very elderly and frail man alone. But you have Sumner Redstone's lawyers, you know, having a geriatric psychiatrist saying he's competent. And then you have Manuela's expert, another doctor, saying he appears not to be competent. So the judge is going to be somewhat forced to do something, because right now there's a total conflict about, is he or is he not capable? Now that he has stepped down as the chairman of Viacom and CBS, of course, maybe it's not so much about the specific day-to-day of those two companies right now, but it is about what's going to happen with that trust. Meanwhile, you know, we've had a lot of talk about diversity issues and gender equality in the industry, and I'm just going to take a few minutes to note Ryan Murphy. And Ryan Murphy is, of course, the producer and director and force behind shows like Glee and American Horror Story and now The People versus O.J. Simpson, the subject of our interview today with our guests. And he's doing something which I think is really striking. He's starting this foundation called HALF.
Yeah, he basically is saying, you know, he was inspired by our Women in Entertainment event that The Hollywood Reporter sponsored. And he says, I personally have not done enough on this issue. And instead of talk about it, I'm going to make a commitment to hire half of the directors on his shows will be women or minorities.
He also is doing outreach. You know, he has some really impressive mentors lined up, including Nina Jacobson, who is one of the producers of The People versus O.J., and Dee Dee Gardner, who works with Brad Pitt at Plan B. And this year they have The Big Short and The Revenant in contention for Oscar. And they are going to work with people in colleges, starting here in Los Angeles and reaching out across the country to find strong candidates to move up in the ranks.
And the key thing here is it's action. You know, there's been so much talk about this issue over the past year since the salary irregularities were exposed in the Sony hack and since these statistics came out that showed that female directors have just such a hard time gaining traction. It makes a difference that this is actually, it's him saying he's going to do something. You know, it'll be interesting following up in a year or two to see whether he's been able to do that. But at least for now, it's someone putting their power behind their mouth.
And he does have the power to make Fox let him do whatever he wants, because he's very important to that company.
Right. And as we saw with the ratings for People versus O.J., his shows draw an audience. So he is in the position.
That's where the power comes from.
Yeah. He's in the position to make these kinds of changes.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. It was 22 years ago that the country and the world learned of the brutal murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. The new FX series, The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, revisits that drama, starting with the discovery of the crime and staying with the story through the slow-speed Bronco chase and the televised trial that lasted a year. Cuba Gooding Jr. plays Simpson, and his dream team of lawyers is played by John Travolta, Courtney B. Vance, and Nathan Lane. More than 5 million people tuned in to watch the series premiere on February 2nd. As The People versus O.J. gets underway, there are problems for prosecutor Marcia Clark, played by Sarah Paulson. In this scene, she listens to a tape of LAPD officers bungling an early interview with Simpson. Bruce Greenwood plays her boss, L.A. District Attorney Gil Garcetti.
This is a fiasco. Why did the cops tolerate it?
Because they're not used to grilling a star. He's the juice. He rushed more than 2,000 yards in one season.
I have no idea what that means, but you know what? It shouldn't matter. He got away with beating her. He is not going to get away with killing her.
Our guests, Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander, have made a career of writing movie scripts about complicated people, including Ed Wood, Larry Flint, and comedian Andy Kaufman. So it was natural for a pair of producers to turn to them after optioning The Run of His Life, New Yorker reporter Jeffrey Toobin's book about the Simpson case.
The project originated from Nina Jacobson and Brad Simpson.
Right.
And they set it up at Fox. And Scott and I have never done television before. We tend to turn down most things.
You turn down most things generally?
Most submissions, I mean, for us end up just feeling kind of bogus because we've done a lot of true life material. So people will just throw a name at us and then think we're going to respond. So if they just say, Woodrow Wilson, are you in? That's not good enough for us.
I mean, I'm just going to orient my listener and say this is Scott talking.
That was Scott.
Yes.
Yeah. We have to have the idea that really excites us in addition to that personality.
And the real life, I mean, you've done Ed Wood, People versus Larry Flint, Man on the Moon. These are all people who are real. Is that a thing for you? You want real people or it just happened that
no,
way?
No, we like it quite a bit. I think it's one of the reasons why we wound up doing this OJ case.
Just for equal time. This is Larry.
This is Larry. is the, you know, the old adage, you know, truth is stranger than fiction, that movies and to a lesser degree right now, TV is so cookie cutter that one of the ways you can kind of like, as a Trojan horse, bring interesting material into places is by basing it on a true story. You say, this actually happened, and it seems to connect more.
But you have been sufficiently successful at this point in your life that people send you a lot of stuff that they want you to work on.
And to finish what I was saying before, we tend to turn down everything. And when we were told that someone was doing this O.J. Simpson project, Scott and I just looked at each other instantly and said, yes.
Really? Because I would have think you would say no.
Well, no. I mean, it was the long form that was appealing. I'm sure as all your listeners know, the mid-budget drama has collapsed in features.
Yeah.
And everybody trying to do that kind of character-based writing is moving over to TV. Larry and I, we don't understand normal TV shows where there's like five characters and they get together every week and then they sit in their living room and they banter. We would not be able to do that. But a story with a fixed arc, with a beginning, middle, and end, at least it reminds us of what we've been doing all these years. And as soon as we heard the idea of OJ, we looked at it as a 10-hour movie. We could go into so many themes, and there's such a richness of material, and there's so many crazy characters, and there's so many ideas that we could explore that you would never be able to do in the two-hour movie version.
I know Nina Jacobson, who obviously has a long career and did the Hunger Games movies. She hasn't done TV before.
No,
none of us had.
And was she thinking of this at one time? Was it conceived as a movie?
No.
Never.
Yeah, they decided they wanted to get into television, and this was their first project. And so it was a case of four of us.
It was four novices.
Not really knowing, you know, the medium or the form and just deciding we're going to do it our way.
But what was kind of cool about the four of us not having done it before is there was no sense of deadlines or what's expected. So we talked about themes and ideas for a long time with Brad and Nina. And then Larry and I took a year just to write our first outline and to write the pilot because there were so many themes that we stumbled across that we didn't see initially. I mean, we always knew we were going to make it ultimately about race and about the bad relationship between the LAPD and African Americans in Los Angeles. But then we started discovering, oh, okay, you have the beginning of the 24-hour news cycle. You have the beginning of reality television. You've got socioeconomic disparity, which we hadn't really thought about before, which is that Marcia Clark has to take her homework home with her every night because she doesn't have as many helper bees as Bob Shapiro and
she's
Johnny
kind
Cochran
of
do.
Outmanned and outgunned.
Yeah, so she's working harder. Then we started looking at the gender politics, which is Marcia Clark was being judged differently than all the
on
men that were surrounding her.
Yeah, yeah.
With all of these themes, did you have a way of balancing it because you wanted it to be race or, I mean, oh, we're too heavy on the women thing. Let's go back to the race thing.
I mean, that was one of the reasons why I think we had all these discussions. We almost treated it like salons where we discussed all these things and then we figured out ways of structuring it. I mean, when Scott said it took us a year to do an outline, it wasn't like an outline for just one episode. It was an outline for all 10 episodes.
And each episode had a theme.
Right. And so like just talking about, say, the gender politics, episode 6 is all about Marcia. It's called Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. And it really almost exclusively looks at, you know, what was like for Marcia Clark during during this. You know, where episode 5 is called The Race Card, and it talks about what happens between Cochrane and Darden and their relationship. And so earlier we described it as one big 10-hour movie, but actually we wound up being like 10 one-hour movies where every movie has this arc to it.
We even had this idea almost for a, I guess, baseball parlance, for a seventh inning stretch, which is episode 8. We said, what if we stop the whole show and we back up and we show what the jury went through? Which right. we thought was really kind of nutty. And we said it'll be like a palate cleanser for the audience. And then someone in the room who had actually worked on a TV show said, oh, yeah, that's called a stunt episode. We go, okay, cool.
It's called a what episode?
A stunt episode.
Oh, a stunt episode.
You know, and so we could explore what ultimately was 12 people, but started as 24 people that nobody ever thinks about because they weren't allowed to be on court TV. But the idea that these poor souls were sequestered, they were locked up in the Intercontinental Hotel for a year. Anybody would go crazy after that. And so that affected what happened too.
Obviously, this was based on Jeffrey Toobin's book. Mm-hmm. But did you interview people?
We did not interview anyone. For many of our other projects, there isn't a book that we're basing things on. So we actually had to act like journalists. We had to track down the real people and interview them. And in this case, we not only had Toobin's book, which is terrific, every single participant in the trial wrote at least one book. Most of them wrote two books.
Sometimes three.
Yeah, it's insane. And then on top of that, there were so many think piece books and all the court transcripts. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of pages.
Daunting.
So we felt like we could get everyone's point of view from that. And there were certain people who have passed away. Someone like Cochrane is no longer with
right.
us.
And
Kardashian, we felt like if you start talking to some people who are alive and some people who aren't, you start shifting the spotlight to one person rather than another, or feeling sympathy for one person rather than another. So we felt there was enough out there that we didn't need to talk to
even when
anybody.
It came to the jurors?
The jurors wrote books. Michael Knox wrote a quickie book for Michael Vinter.
The three ladies wrote a book together.
Yeah, there are several books. One of them appeared in Playboy, too. Like, literally a month after she got dismissed from the jury, she's in Playboy, like, nude and in the juror box.
Got you could yes. follow up with the aftermath.
No, it's crazy, crazy.
So you pitch it, and it's Kevin Reilly at Fox. And then the bad thing happens to Kevin. He's not yes. there anymore. Right. And you end up being switched to FX? Is
yes.
that right?
I mean, it wasn't that complicated. It was always FX Productions, which was an arm of FX.
Right. They were the long-form studio for Fox.
So it was going to be FX producing a show
for the Fox
Big
Network,
Fox.
Right.
And then when Kevin...
There's a lot of corporate divisions.
Yeah. When Kevin went away, there was still a great deal of affection for the show in the studio. But Landgraf, who runs FX...
John Landgraf.
He managed to bring it back into his division.
And by this time, we had already opened a small writer's room, and then we had writers writing three more episodes at that point. So there was a good collection of five or six scripts in addition to the ones that we had written. And then that's when Ryan read the scripts.
Ryan Murphy, who made Glee and American Horror
yeah,
Story.
Yeah, he's
and
the
so
biggest
so
producer
on.
Over at the Fox yes. Corporation.
Very big producer.
He was looking for a project, and he called up his agent, who coincidentally is our agent, and Brad Nina's agent, Joe Cohen, and he said, are there any good scripts out there? Yeah. I don't know what to do next. And Joe sent him our episodes 1 and 2, and then everyone
okay,
started
so
getting
how
phone
is that
calls.
When that happens? Do you say, I mean, I just us talking here, don't worry about anybody listening.
Just between us.
Just between,
oh,
I mean,
good.
I always
goodness.
Wonder, is it
now
sort of like when
honest.
Michael DeLuca yeah. hears yeah. that Scott Rudin is interested in a project he developed, and it's going to be The Social Network, and he's going to be... watch Scott Rudin run down the field with his movie, or is it more like, oh, good, a TV guy?
I think it's oh, good, a TV guy. I mean, oh, good, it's at least someone who's going to come in and we knew that when Ryan came on board, what Ryan brought was, I wouldn't say a get-out-of-jail-free card from the Fox Corporation, but we knew that we hadn't written a normal television show. We shut down the freeway and we recreate the freeway chase. That's not what you do on a normal television show. And having Ryan come on board, he was able to...
The Big Bang Theory does not get to shut down freeways.
He was going to give us the scope and this, you know, the
he had the weight
know.
To get
yeah,
things
we,
done.
And when we talked to Ryan, so he gets the same thing we get in terms of that tone mixture. And we've gone through this before where, we make very eccentric film, so the way we can get those
don't
done,
tell anyone, Larry.
Yeah, done through the studio system has always been trying to get a big
a
dog
big
attached
gorilla,
to whether
yeah.
it's Tim Burton or Milos Forman or Oliver Stone or whatever it is, we find a place that can shelter it.
What are you saying, a sugar daddy?
A sugar daddy. We're looking for a sugar daddy.
You need a sugar daddy. Everybody needs a sugar daddy. Coming up after a short break, Kara Zuski and Alexander talk about digging deep for long-forgotten details of the OJ trial. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Santa Monica. KCRW is listener-supported. Help us continue to create and distribute our unique content. Go to kcrw.com/join to donate. And thanks.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to writer-producers Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander about their new FX series, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. In his first television role since the 1970s sitcom Welcome Back, Kotter, John Travolta plays Simpson's limelight-loving attorney, Robert Shapiro. Cuba Gooding Jr. plays the accused murderer, and David Schwimmer stars as O.J.'s devoted friend, Robert Kardashian.
O.J. has a very good relationship with the cops. They come over for tennis sometimes, Saturday pool parties.
That's useful. That's good to know. You know, I wonder, Rob, what do you think of the idea that you join the team, too?
You could reactivate your license, and you might provide a special insight to us.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. Bobby understands me.
The idea to cast Travolta came from series executive producer Ryan Murphy, who also directed four episodes.
He went after Travolta, and then Nina, when she was running Disney, I think had done some movies with John. So right. I think the two of them tag-teamed him
right.
for months, just trying to beat John into submission, saying, you've got to do this. You will be so great.
We had Travolta in Cuba, I think we're the first two. It all seemed, then it became this thing where everybody kind of wanted to be in it. So
I think Travolta's the cookie of this series. He just kind of swallows every scene
he's in.
And he's amazing in it, I think. So it's Travolta, Cuba, and then everybody else.
Yeah. And Sarah Paulson came in because she's part of Ryan's stock company. So it was those three, I think, right off the bat.
I actually was lobbying for David Schwimmer really early because Larry and I had seen him in an equity waiver play that a friend wrote about 20 years ago. It's just this little 49-seat theater, and he was so amazing. He had an empathy and also a physical resemblance, and I just thought he would just be so perfect for Kardashian, who we wanted to sort of have sneak up on people as the most heartfelt part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's so obsessed and in love with OJ.
Yeah.
It's like, what a romance.
Well, it's one of those things where Kardashian was the only guy there for the right reason. He was there because he wanted to believe in his friend.
Yeah, he was like, the one who thought
he
was innocent.
Kardashian was a very moral person, and if his best friend tells him that he didn't kill this woman, he's choosing to believe in his friend. He's choosing to be loyal. Right? He's not there for money. He's not there for fame. He's not there for any of that. He's there.
He's true blue, and he's
a
very religious guy and very sincere, apparently. You know, the timing on this, of course, it's only the more relevant right now because every day there's another thing. You must be.
But we didn't know that 3 years ago. When 3 years ago we pitched it, it was like,
no Ferguson.
It was like,
there was no Ferguson 3 years ago. Yeah. We thought we were telling a bit of a time capsule story, and we were going to do our best to make it relevant to viewers today. And then as the 3 years went along, you know, Ferguson and then one after another police shooting, it was really startling that the show started feeling like it was torn from the headlines, which we never thought about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Which was weird because 3 years ago you didn't know, is it too early? Are people still sick of the O.J. Simpson trial? Is it too late? Do people don't care anymore? But somehow we've managed to be the right place at the right time.
Needle,
and to be also a part of this whole true crime renaissance
thing.
With Making a Murderer.
Well, I was going to say, show is the anti-Making a Murderer, really. It's like really struck me as like, this is the diametric opposite of Making a Murderer.
That's funny.
Where they actually have all this evidence and they still can't convict.
Well, we're the cover story of Entertainment Weekly, and it's remaking a murder.
I think it's more like anti-Making a Murderer.
Yeah.
I have to say, when I first picked it up, I thought, oh, can I live through this again? And then the first 30 seconds, you're so hooked. I don't know what makes it like that. It's so addictive.
Well, it was very important to us just to not make it what you're expecting.
Right.
So we really just drill down into that research. And Jeff Toobin's book has so many bizarro details that we could jam the scripts with stuff that you don't know already. So it wouldn't be, okay, yeah, I know the trial.
Right.
What? Really?
That happened?
We just wanted to keep surprising the viewer.
Yeah, well, it works.
But I think that's happened to us before, where a lot of people, when they pick up our scripts, they say, oh, why would anyone want to make a movie about Larry Flint? I'm just going to read 5 pages and put it down. Like, oh, my God, look at this. Look at that.
Right.
You know, and we're attracted to projects that are almost a dare. Like, oh, you're not really going to make something great about the O.J. Simpson trial, are you?
Right, right.
And we've always loved the minutia of process.
Yes.
And you do a trial. Well, that's all it is.
It's all recorded for you.
Yeah, so
in this
we
case,
could just
literally
do,
with cameras.
Yeah, all the wonky behind the scenes decision making, you know, in terms of the DA choosing not to go for capital punishment, and this is why. But if you don't go for capital punishment, that means that you're going to have a less hardened jury, and there's just all these domino effects that happen.
Yeah,
and that's all backstage kind of stuff, and that was the stuff that really turned us on.
How much of that is in Jeffrey Toobin's book?
A lot of it.
It will be just a paragraph of a detail in Jeffrey's book, and we look at that and say, "Oh, that could be plot. How did that decision get made? Of that, you know, and what did it take to do that?" A lot of times when people do true life stories, they kind of treat them as manifest destiny, like, "Oh, this is what happened, so there was only one route to get there." And I think we like to do is say, "No, there's 1,000 routes it could have taken,
right.
and it's just a bunch of weird stuff happened, and that made
this is
that
where
made
it
go down that road."
Yeah. I mean, there are places, and you said you didn't talk to the real people. There are places in the script where Marcia Clark makes huge mistakes, or Robert Shapiro makes huge mistakes of judgment. And
yeah.
Do you expect to hear from them? Have they been invited to see any of it at this point?
No. The only person who sort of has actually worked her way into a little bit of the inner circle is Marcia Clark, who, after we were shooting Sarah,
she reached out and
they became
friendly.
Yeah.
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 But otherwise, the cast stayed away from the originals.
And I also don't think we're telling them anything they don't know. We're not making up the mistakes that they made.
Yeah, sometimes people I find are not necessarily aware.
I mean, Larry and I are research freaks. We like the research. Almost everything in this show had to be double-sourced or triple-sourced. And the Fox lawyers were very meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
every single
fun.
Thing we said, really? Should Shapiro try to get O.J. to plead a manslaughter? That couldn't have happened. You know, so then we'd have to say, no, it's on this page of this book and this page of this book.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Also, but here's the thing. I don't think really, people make mistakes in this project, but I think one of the things we're very proud of is I think we've shown the humanity behind a lot of these people.
You're fair to the most,
yeah,
almost
that,
all
that, I think
those
I,
who deserve fairness, I suppose.
Our goal was that if you come in thinking one thing about one of these characters, you were going to show another side.
You know,
if you think Marcia Clark was just in over her head and she didn't know what she was doing, you're going to see why she made the decision she did.
Right.
And even someone like Bob Shapiro, I think people will start to feel really bad for him by the end of the trial.
Yeah.
He takes some really hard hits.
Yeah.
Late in the show.
So I gather your next project is Patty Hearst.
Yes, also based on a book by Jeff Toobin.
But not TV.
No, we're set up as a feature.
Because?
I don't know, but it feels like we could
do a
good job of it in 2 hours.
Are you back in this world, because you started out saying that grown-up themed films are no longer such a thing, as we hear many times on this show. Is it set up?
It's set up at Fox 2000 and... I mean, it'll be a grown-up movie, but it's a completely crazy story. I mean, it certainly has elements in common with O.J. in terms of the media just
the
sort
circus.
Of becoming
right.
part of the story. And
how many times was Patty on the cover of Newsweek?
I think seven times Patty was on the cover of Newsweek in a 2-year period. And there's a lot of shootouts and... fireballs and
I can't wait to see it.
In the trailer.
Yes.
So do you feel like, well, I visited TV and it was great, but no more?
No, I think we were
it was so much work.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. we have to have a project that we're in love with to do it. We'll be producers next season on American Crime Story if it gets picked up, hopefully. But we're not going to be writing. And
I'm trying to remember if we know the crime that's going to be.
It's going to be about Katrina.
What is it
so
about
it's not
Katrina?
A specific crime, but it'll be about all the all the bad things.
But
that
you
went
are
down
not
there.
Writing it.
We are not right.
You're not doing another 10-hour movie.
Not right this second.
Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander are the writers of The People vs. O.J. Simpson, an American crime story. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you,
fun.
Kim.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.